It's past nine. We do have the required quorum to start. Just going to quickly check Mr. Ngoma if I have any apologies.
Good morning, Chairperson. Things then I don't have any. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Welcome all of you members to this meeting. This is not supposed to be a very long meeting. We had set up this meeting. Today was set up as a day for initially for us continuing and concluding with our what I call the first phase of witness hearing. We're supposed to have concluded at least by today with the last witness of those witnesses that as the committee would have identified together with the evidence leaders. It would have been Mr. Niels van der Merwe as the last witness. And I'm raising that point because we are left with concluding the cross-examination of Ms. Tijani and leaving the evidence with Ms. Niels van der Merwe and cross-examination and members. And thereafter, there would be a little bit of a break to prepare, to allow for the public protector team to lead evidence of the witnesses that they would have identified together with the public protector. We're not there yet. As you would know, I would have concluded our meeting on Wednesday after listening to the recusal application of the public protector on the chairperson of the committee, as well as Honorable Milam. I indicated at the closure of that meeting that we had welcomed that application with an open mind and would regard it as a comprehensive application. And I further indicated that the committee will find time because on Wednesday, all I did was to ask members of the committee if there are any clarities they wanted to seek, which a few of them did not allow for any reflections by the members. Would use today as part of members reflecting on that. But I did indicate at the closure of that meeting that once we apply our mind, we would want to make a decision so that there is no
recording in progress
on the matter. So the only item we have today for the meeting is that item of the recusal application. And I do want to appreciate and thank members for the manner in which they conducted themselves on Wednesday in listening step by step to all the issues that were raised as part of the recusal application. Today we're going to upfront ask the legal services to make brief reflections, and thereafter I'm going to allow members to contribute into the discussion on this item that we have brought for this meeting. Next week would have been a week where there would not have been a program. With that, colleagues, not wasting any time, I'm going to invite Ms. Fatima Ibrahim to take the platform.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the members. Thank you, Chair. Chair, there are just three issues that I'd like to touch on. Two have to do with the recusal application, and one is more a matter of housekeeping than anything that I just wish to clarify. So I think I'll start with that one, Chair. At the end of August, we had drafted an addendum to the directives to speak more particularly to the issue of recalling witnesses, because this was a matter, as members would be aware, that was repeatedly cropping up in the hearings and we needed to attend to it. I sent this draft directive to the chair on the 31st of August, and in that email to the chair, I stated, please find attached for your consideration. We have a meeting with Advocate Mpofu scheduled for tomorrow, and that would have been on the 1st, where we will table the proposed amendment. I will call you with an update. And that, of course, would have followed the instructions of the chair that the legal teams need to engage in the back room, as you've been calling it. Chair, that meeting did indeed occur on the 1st of September, where we met with Advocate Mpofu and the rest of the PP's legal team. And during the meeting itself, the document, the draft addendum was then shared. And in fact, I had emailed it to Temankosi during the meeting, indicating to Temankosi that it's a draft document. And he in turn sent it to the PP's legal team, indicating the same, that it was indeed a document in a draft format. My understanding at the end of that meeting, Chair, was that we would get some written input, even though Advocate Mpofu had raised various issues around those draft directives, that addendum at least, which I had noted. And on the 6th of September, I had in fact communicated with Advocate Bauer to let her know that I had not received anything back from the PP's team, and inquiring whether perhaps she may have received some word on the draft directives, which at that stage on the afternoon of the 6th, she had not. Shortly thereafter, Chair, we received a letter addressed to yourself where the PP's team object to many of the, or the entire procedure really, as was captured in that draft directive, in that addendum, and they demanded that it be withdrawn. And of course, at that stage, it hadn't even been adopted yet. But the demand was that it be withdrawn. So, of course, there was some sort of miscommunication or misunderstanding that had transpired. We had a meeting with the chair scheduled for 7 p.m. that evening, Chair, and this was one of the matters that would have been placed on the agenda for discussion there to dissolve this clear miscommunication that had happened. Unfortunately, Chair, just prior to that meeting, I'd taken ill and I'd hardly managed to finish the meeting. And so I did not get to the point where the letter and the treatment of the further treatment of the letter was discussed with you. And unfortunately, I ended up being hospitalized and off sick then for a number of days. And my colleagues that had stepped in would not have been aware of the letter. And so it was not responded to. But on my return and having considered the recusal application, Chair, I noted that it is one of the grounds that are listed in the recusal application, this apparent adoption of this addendum to the directive. So again, I was taken by surprise and wondered if maybe it had been adopted whilst I was off sick, and I made those inquiries and I was told that in fact that had not been the case. So there seems to be some confusion around whether those draft directives were adopted or not. And for those of you that do not necessarily follow the interface that happens between legal services and the chair, behind the scenes, I would quality control such documents, and I would indicate whether I'm satisfied from a legal point of view that the chair could issue or not. And of course, nothing of that sort was done from my side. But perhaps, Chair, you can indicate yourself whether you have, in fact, issued that or not issued it, just so that we have it on record. And also, Chair, I note that letter that was sent on the 6th says that you had previously adopted it. But funny enough, I had only sent it to you on the 31st. And between that date and the 6th, there was, in fact, no sitting of the committee. So definitely there's some confusion that's reigning around that. But we take responsibility because, as I say, we had not responded timeously to that letter, unfortunately, because of what had transpired with me being away. But Chair, you can place on record whatever you need to in relation to that. Chair, I want to move on now to the recusal application and the treatment of this application by the committee. I listened to the discussion between Advocate Mpofu and Advocate Advocate Bauer that followed the telepathic exchange, as they put it, in the last meeting, in which they both agreed that it was standard practice that a presiding officer or a judge presides over a recusal application themselves. And I think Advocate Mpofu had said one of the awkward things of such an application is that you have to put it to the person who's being asked to recuse themselves. And Chair, you can, of course, speak to the awkwardness of that since you sat through it in the last meeting. Then Advocate Bauer had indicated, and correctly so, that she takes note that Parliament is unique and that the two legal teams are in agreement that they're only speaking to the issue of the actual presiding over the application rather than the decision for recusal itself. And it's just that I want to further explore and elaborate. So members would be aware that in an ordinary case of recusal, so in the judicial system for judicial proceedings or even in a commission of inquiry, it's the person whose recusal is being sought who not only presides over the application, but then would also decide on the question of whether the application should be granted. So whether I believe I should be recused or not. So by way of example, we recently heard the recusal application for Justice Zondo in the State Capture Commission by the former president. He listened and presided over that application, and then he himself made a determination that he was of the view that he should not be recused. Chair, I want to submit that the application for the recusal of yourself and that of Mr. Milam must be somewhat differentiated from recusal applications in the judicial spheres and in commissions where that consist of only one presiding officer. Firstly, Chair, you serve as chairperson at the behest of this committee, having been appointed unopposed by the members of this committee. The members, in turn, serve at the behest of their parties, who have found them to be the appropriate persons to sit on the committee. And in turn, the parties themselves serve at the behest of the electorate, whose votes secured these seats that members now find themselves in. In addition, Chair, the committee is a constitutionally mandated committee as referred to in Section 194B. I know Advocate Mpofu differs with my interpretation on that and is of the view that this is not the removal committee. But this committee is certainly performing a constitutional function on behalf of the electorate. And it's a function that requires all members of this committee to participate in the process of making that ultimate recommendation to the Assembly on the removal, whatever that recommendation may be. In other words, Chair, this is not Mr. Janchi's committee. It is not a one-man show where ultimately you as Chair will make a recommendation to the Assembly on whether the PP has misconducted herself or is incompetent as alleged. Your role is simply to preside over the committee, but not to make decisions for the committee. Similarly, Mr. Milam is just one member of a group of members who will ultimately collectively make the recommendation to the Assembly, and he has no more power than any other member on the committee. Unfortunately, though, Chair, whilst the rules provided for the appointment procedure in respect of a chair does not provide for the procedure for the removal of a chairperson on the basis of bias or any other grounds. So the parliamentary rules have a lacuna as far as that is concerned. It simply does not cover it, either in the NA rules or specifically in the rules related to this committee. It also does not provide for a procedure where a member can be removed by a committee. This is a matter which is usually within the domain of political parties who may recall members as they so wish. The Code of Ethics and Members' Interests, Chair, does provide a procedure for conflict of interest, and that would relate to personal or pecuniary interests in matters being determined by a House or committee. But that rule is too narrow to be applied here. But I mention it because it's useful to consider and to draw an analogy. That rule provides that a member who is conflicted, and that would be your pecuniary or personal conflict, must withdraw from the proceedings of that committee where a matter is decided, unless the committee decides that the interest is trivial or not relevant. Thus, it envisages a role for the committee over and above the duty of an individual member to recuse themselves in the case of a conflict. Thus, Chair, I agree with the evidence leaders and Advocate Mpofu that you must preside over the application, as you did on Wednesday, and preside over any meetings where this application is to be considered. I'm of the view that you must personally consider the application as it's brought against you and inform this committee whether on the basis of the grounds raised in the recusal application, you're of the view that you should recuse yourself or not. Similarly, Mr. Milam must do the same. However, Chair, should yourself or Mr. Milam not recuse yourselves, the matter cannot end there as it would in a judicial proceeding. It follows that because this is a multi-party democratic committee who's placed its confidence in you and elected you as chair and as the appointing committee, it must therefore similarly be seized with the question of your removal and the concomitant consideration of the recusal application. Chair, this is in line with the decision of the Constitutional Court in the recusal application heard by that court very far back in 1999 in the Sarfa matter. In that case, Dr. Louis Leite, who was then the president of SARFU, sought the recusal of four of the justices of the Constitutional Court on the basis of their relationship with the appellant, who was President Mandela, and who had, of course, appointed those justices to the bench. And they were accused of being biased based on various political and personal grounds. And the court there to consider the procedure it would follow in determining the recusal application. And it had regard to the fact that if one judge, in the opinion of other members of the court, incorrectly refused to recuse him or herself, that decision could then fatally contaminate the ultimate decision of the court. And the other members then may well have a duty to refuse to sit with that judge. In other words, where a judge who sits as part of a bench or a panel, that judge must ensure that they do not sit with another judge whose presence would render a proceeding to be irregular. And the court then determined that the correct procedure to follow would be two-pronged. The individual justices would have to consider the recusal as it related to themselves, but the court as a whole would also need to consider the recusal application. In that matter, none of the justices recused themselves, and the court as a whole then concurred with that decision. Chair, similarly, my advice, therefore, to yourself and Mr. Milam, is that you would need to individually consider the application and report back to the committee, and then the committee itself would need to deliberate and make a decision on the matter. However, whilst the committee may have the power to remove you as chair, it does not have the power to remove either yourself or Mr. Milam as members of the committee. However, it follows that if the committee is of the view that you are biased, that your continued presence then as a member would taint the entire process going forward. The question that now has to be answered in the parliamentary sphere is, how do we then secure the removal of these members from the committee? And Chair, we submit that the correct thing to do would be to lobby the respective whips and parties who appointed these members to remove them on the basis that their continued participation in the proceedings would taint the proceedings and may lead to irregularities. But the NA table can be further approached for advice on this aspect if and when needed after the committee deliberates. Lastly, Chair, I just want to place on the record, and perhaps this is stating the obvious, that the application for recusal is very serious in nature. It requires careful and weighty consideration in the first instance by yourself and Mr. Milam, and secondly by the members of the committee. That being said, Chair, I do question the appropriateness of a recusal application, given that I've indicated that the Chair is not a decision maker, and the rules require that the committee must act as a whole in order to make a finding and ultimately give a recommendation. Thus, having considered many of the grounds of recusal that have been raised in the application, I would have thought that those would be more appropriately dealt with in a review application, if and only if the Assembly were ultimately to vote in favour of removal based on the recommendation of this committee. But nonetheless, Chair, as the evidence leaders and Advocate Mpofu pointed out at the very beginning of this process, we are in uncharted waters and we must expect that there will be stumbling blocks. The process has been characterized by ongoing litigation, various objections and so on. And all of these are within PP's right to contend and raise. I don't want to enter into a debate on the legal strategy. It's not my role to do so. And in any event, that's why we have lawyers, because we differ on how the law should be applied. So that is what I'll say on that. However, Chair, I do want the committee to be alive to the fact that based on the outcome of this application, the PP's team may seek further alternative and urgent legal relief through the courts, which may have the effect of delaying or disrupting this process. And even if such relief is not sought immediately, this issue of bias in respect of both the Chair and Honourable Milam may again rear its head in a review application in the event that the Assembly votes in favour of removing the PP. So it won't be the last that we hear of it if such a decision is taken. I have been at pains since the beginning of the process, Chair, to indicate that the cardinal rule underpinning this process is that of fairness. And given the seriousness of the application, it may be wise to seek independent external legal advice to assist this committee in making an informed decision where the tests for bias can be applied to the facts at hand. Members must be confident that they've taken a legally sound decision and that they're able to defend that decision if need be. However, Chair, any decision taken should not be unduly delayed. The committee has a duty in terms of the rules to ensure that this process happens within a reasonable time. And more importantly, Chair, the Constitution directs that all constitutional obligations must be performed diligently and without delay. So this must be borne in mind as we go forward. Chair, I think I've exhausted my time and I'll leave it. I will leave it there. Thank you for the indulgence. I'll answer any questions as necessary as they arise. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Fatima Ibrahim, for that brief reflection on the matter. I will invite members to indicate their own contributions on the matter, and perhaps I will start with that. Members are free to do both, do those reflections, but also if you have got any clarities you want to seek, please do that. I am now recognizing Honorable Olomisa, followed by Honorable Hendricks, followed by Honorable Zungula, followed by Honorable Heron and Honorable Van Meenen, Sukas, Honorable Nkosi. In that order, Honorable Olomisa. Honorable Olomisa.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings from Copenhagen in this cold area weather here. And good morning to my colleagues and to our legal advisor. I think the first thing which we should look into is to agree about the procedure on how to handle this matter, without going into the substantive arguments as contained in the document by the PP, so that we are sure about each and every step we take. I'm tempted to support the view by the legal advisor, who says that we may have to consider asking an independent legal advice so that we don't make a mistake or play into the hands of those who might be happy to take us to court. In the event, for instance, that the chairperson, when he says in his personal capacity, if you were to say, I'm not going to stand down or step down, but if we look at the accusations, especially those paragraphs where they are alleging that the chairperson was biased even long before this inquiry. So I think we will have to ask some questions as to whether the House was aware when he was appointed a chairperson on whether he declared that he had indeed had a view against the public protector. But be that as it may, I think I must stop there, because if that would be the case, where the chairperson refuses to step down, then we might have to take the whole process back to the House and advise us. But I think the legal advice, as suggested by our legal advisor, is a sound route and decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Olamisa, Honorable Hendricks. Honorable Hendricks. Honorable Hendricks, you are muted.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Sorry about that. Honorable Chair, I would like to state Al Jamaa's position as far as this whole matter is concerned. There was a vigorous process to appoint a public protector, and Al Jamaa's position is that no matter what, the public protector must serve a full term of office. However, this committee is a creature of Parliament. It has been created by Parliament, and every political party was required to send a member to this committee. And if there was a voluntary situation, we would not have sent a member to this committee, because we only have one member in Parliament, and we cannot cope with all the responsibilities of a member of Parliament. But we are here now. And our position, I first want to speak about the appointment of the Democratic Alliance member. I don't think that any one of us, or you, Mr. Chairman, has the right to tell the DA who to send to this committee. If we have problems with regard to the member that they have sent, then we need to engage with the DA and try and persuade them to change it. I don't think it's the jurisdiction or the right of you, Mr. Chairman, or of this committee to decide who the DA should send to this committee. And similarly, you can't decide who Al Jamaa should send to this committee, although we only have one member in Parliament. I then want to move on to the fact that this committee is a creature of Parliament. And while members serving on this committee will have an independent mind in making the final decision, it must be quite clear that one of the decisions that this committee did was to appoint you as the chairperson. And it's only this committee we feel that must make a decision whether we want you to continue as chairperson or not. I don't think that the precedents of the Zondo Commission and all other commissions, like I said, this is a creature of Parliament, and it is the committee members that must decide, and not you, but you respect whether you should remain or not. We want to give we want to conclude by saying, Honorable Chair, that we have been very impressed on how you've handled the proceedings so far. And we don't agree with anything that the public protector has said in order to have you to be recused. And one of the problems is that this inquiry has been dragged on too long. Because of the fact that other parties are in the majority and we only have one member of Parliament, we had to fall in line with the long, with the many days that have been set out for this particular hearing. It is unlike a committee in Parliament. And then also allowing a vigorous cross-examination. We don't agree with that process because there should be timelines. You can't cross-examine until someone comes home one day. This matter has dragged on too far. It's very expensive. It's R1 million a day. And it's a pity that the suspension was with pay. It should have been without pay so that there won't be attempts by the public protector to drag out this matter. But coming back to the matters on hand, we feel that the Democratic, if members, the public protector or anyone has issues with the representative of the DA, they should engage with the DA, but the final decision should be with the DA. And as far as your recusal is concerned, Honorable Chair, don't take the rights away of the members of this committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable. I now recognize Honorable Zungula.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to yourself and the committee members. I think, Chair, let me first start by asking a question, to Ms. Fatima regarding the Code of Ethical Conduct, because I think that should be the point of departure on the issue of conflict of interest. The Code of Ethical Conduct on Section 5.1.2 speaks about, firstly, the interest must be declared, and where appropriate, the member should recuse himself or herself from any forum considering or deciding on the matter. The point I want clarity on here, and perhaps it could be personal, and maybe we could not venture into such in the public, especially in such a forum. My understanding is that committee chairpersons earn more than the ordinary members of parliament. Now, there is, from that view or from that perspective, from the side of the chairperson, there is benefit that is derived from being a chairperson. There's a financial benefit there from that perspective. Now, it is something that would be difficult for the chairperson to make a decision on his own based on something that he derives material benefit on. So that is the first question I wanted to ask Ms. Fatima on that section 5.1.2 of the Ethical Code of Conduct for Members of Parliament. Secondly, I would like to support the general when he speaks about, let us agree on the process to deal with such. Unfortunately, there is no standard procedure that deals with such matters, because the biggest issue that we are going to face here, Chairperson, is that we come from a political party that has members in this committee that are more than the other members from the other parties. Now, the reality, which is the same as in the ethics committee, is that members of the ruling party will always, defend one another, even if it compromises the substance of what is being discussed. And I want to presume that will be the case even here. I've never been to any forum whereby the ruling party members actually hold each other accountable for whatever that could have transpired, by people that do not have any vested interest on the matter, that do not have any political party mandates, would be best suited for this exercise. Just like the general has said, there is a strong possibility that this could lead to going to the courts. And if it goes to the courts, then, the politics will be put aside, the principle as well as the law will be, will be followed to the T. So it would be wise to follow that advice from the general, that let's get a legal opinion or legal advice on the matter. That is all I wanted to raise, Chair, for now. Then you'll guide us when we can proceed now to dealing with the substance of the issues raised. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Zungula.
Chairperson, it's Honorable Swell. I have got problem with late shedding. I will request that I be allowed to speak earlier. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Siwela. Honorable Heron.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. Chair, I think I just want to make some observations. I think it's trite, and we've said it over and over again, that our duty is to ensure that this process is fair. It's a precedent-setting process. And whatever we do as a committee and whatever decision is made around this recusal application must withstand scrutiny, must have the confidence of the public that are observing, and the outcome needs to be credible. I've seen it being argued that this is the process is not a court process, but I think we have to accept or at least observe that we are conducting a process that is has all the hallmarks of a disciplinary hearing at least, and if this is not a committee that sits as an ordinary oversight committee. We are essentially conducting what has become a trial where the public protector is defending charges that are leveled against her. I think that the committee cannot determine bias on the part of the chairperson or another member. That is, and I think this is what Advocate Ibrahim was saying, that the chairperson and the Honourable Milam need to make a decision for themselves as to whether they are able to approach this with an open mind, or whether they have brought bias into this process. So all we can do as members of the committee is observe the decisions that are made, and to some extent we can form our own apprehension as to whether there is bias or not. But I think ultimately the decision is a decision that you need to make and Honourable Milam needs to make. But when you make that decision and you consider the application, you have to consider that the decision that you make impacts all of us as members of this committee. And the process, we need to avoid this process being contaminated by bias if there is any. Finally, I want to just say that I think that the comments by Advocate Ibrahim, I disagree with slightly, where she says, you're not a decision maker. Yes, ultimately, you won't decide on your own whether the public protector is guilty of misconduct or incompetence. But you do make decisions along the way that we are not part of. And those decisions are both procedural. So you make rulings on procedural applications as they arise. But I assume that you're also making decisions on the evidence that we are receiving, because I don't recall being consulted ever on which witnesses are coming. And we sit as almost passive recipients of evidence. So I think that the process, you may not make the decision as to whether there's a finding of misconduct or incompetence on your own, but you are making decisions that impact how we get to that decision on the procedure. And it appears to me on the content of the evidence that we're receiving, on whether it's relevant or not, and whether we should hear it or not. So there are decisions that you make that can influence the outcome of this process, because you make procedural decisions, and I assume you make decisions around which evidence, witnesses are being called. And then finally, I did like the suggestion from Advocate Ibrahim that we obtain as a committee some external legal advice. And I think, I assume that external legal advice is on the second part of her two-part decision-making process, where yourself and Honourable Milam need to decide whether you need to recuse yourselves, and if you do or don't, what the committee does next. So I'll leave it there, and thank you for that opportunity.
Thank you, Honourable Aaron, from wherever you are. In those places.
Oh, okay. Very far away.
I can imagine. Thank you.
Honorable Siwela.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to speak in my mother tongue. I don't know whether there are interpretations here, because a person can only dream in his or her mother tongue. This issue is a burning issue. Yahisa makale Chairperson. Yahisa. Xa ku sungula, Chair. La ku vula leswiwa. Loko hi ri timembara ta parliament hi lo voteriwa. Va ta ku interpretela lava nga ta interpreta. I've decided to speak in my mother tongue today to be able to ventilate issues properly. Hi voteriwile ku ya hi ya seva parliament, Chair. I committee leyi loko yi ta fomiwa, ku landzeleriwe ti-process in terms of the rules. Ku va hi ri in numbers, hi ri hi tinambara ta ku tala la ka committee leyi, swi ya hi proportional ya hina ya ti-seat. And no one can challenge that. So issue ya ku hi ta fika namuntlha la, hi jeketeriwa ku hina hi bias even to the Chairperson. That is completely wrong. We are independent here, Chair. Myself, I'm a member of the ANC, independently so. I'm not here to demonstrate the issue of biasness in this committee. Loko bo Chairperson, hi xokovetsela na hina hi ri ti member, if we are allowed also to make presentation on how we feel about this process, the way witnesses are being questioned vigorously. I don't think la ile quarter la one a ile quarter ene ile ku ba fair ene ile ku make sure kuri everyone the rights they are protected. A ile ku judge ni ka munhu up to so far akuna munhu loyi anga guilty according to my understanding, but we are being deprived. Tingondo ta hita jika jikisiwa. We want to remain sober here. Hi yingisela ti-witness ati cross-examinexiwi according to their affidavits. Swa hi pfuna hina hi ri timembara. But this is not happening. Only circus leyi hi vonaka la ka this committee la. The way, a ni swi tivi ku ri I'm not a lawyer, but na background ya legal. Ku hi yona ndlela ya kona ya maendlelo lawa. Phela a hi vana, a hi swivanana, we are not children here. We are adults. And we can't compromise the National Assembly. We need to execute this duty according to the time frame leyi nga nyikiwa yona. All those delay tactics ati vona, we can see them. And Chairperson, loko a ku ri ku mendi Chairperson, a ni ta hlamula ni ku hlamulela. So I can't answer on your behalf. But if I was the chair, I will make my own view based on this application. This application, I were not in agreement with it because look, we must ventilate as members of this committee. Ku hi feel njani, like Honorable Manani says, indicated, which I think it was wrong. But I think that's the way she's feeling. We can't allow a situation like that. The member of the ruling party, the bias. No, that's wrong. Biasness, the bias to the Chairperson. According to me, you are the best Chairperson. Lwe himbonaka achera, arife unikabanu nkari, kahle, wa respect. All those stories related to umelela kala, just to drag us, kuinga complete this process. And I la kungena, kati, in merits and demerits of this matter, because we are not yet there. Let's allow the process to unfold. Even if they can change you, still yitaba makaku kuna vanhu lavanga ka majority. So hi endla njhani ku hile ka majority parliament? What must we do? Must we reduce ourselves to lesser number? No, this is wrong. And please, akuna mhaka ya independent law legal la. We have got legal gurus here in parliament. Let them advise us. The opinion ta vota fana, va eswikolweni swa ku fana, va dyondze ku fana. That's why they call each other learned inana, what friend or whatever. So Chairperson, really, myself in particular, I'm not happy, and I won't allow
anyone, any member from any party to come and lashel us as the ruling party. Because we are the party that's on. I see one in a biasness layer, and I don't think this application is assisting this process. He like a protector, a public protector, and a commotion lawyer. He got a bias here. With fairness, na ye ifanele aniko wangari wako ati hlamulela mara ingakho hila ku lose swa focus ha kombela shem siyaqela ri ya khupela hi kombela ku tirha ntirho wa hina as parliamentarian a hi tsikeni ku kombana na hi tintiwo and chair ishi ya member ra leya DA ya ku ifanele na ye a huma I think the honorable member is a member like any other member. I happen to agree with the latter speaker, Honorable Hendricks, who's saying each party ya decide ako iti saba man. So lerako itatafikala I decide ako man ifanele ngabi kona makako itabana influence. Influence, ita yabanza kaloko say ilangu tisile everything kuti witness letu. The abas witnessa, she related to the motion itself. Motion law one who warrant ako moon asuswanti ron kumanga suswanti ron. And we don't want to be influenced. We are matured enough to can take decisions on our own, but not to be influenced. And here, we are not judging anyone. I see fika, I see fika nkarolo, but we request to be respected in this platform. Please, we come back to respect you. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Siwela. I would have followed you in quite a number of areas, but I wouldn't follow you every because I don't have an interpretation where I'm sitting, but I hope other members follow you too. Thank you
we'll
for that.
We'll interpret for you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Tagute. Thank you, Honorable Tagute. Honorable Van Minen.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks very much. Just going to get my video to work. There we go. Okay, so I really want to thank Ms. Ibrahim, I think, for a very good explanation of how the process should probably work. And I also want to agree with General Holomisa. I think we should not be discussing the merits at this point. We should be determining how we're going to take this forward and the process we're going to follow. However, I really do want to sound a note of caution, Chair. As you rightfully said at the beginning, this matter is already running very much behind. We are seeing enormous delays. I think part of the problem that we're currently facing is the fact that it's not a court of law. It is a parliamentary committee, although it does have certain characteristics of legal process embedded in it. But I think also that, and I have to believe it's inadvertent, that Advocate Mpofu, because he works mainly in a legal sphere and in a legal framework, has in no small part contributed to the sort of push towards it appearing more and more like a trial and all the problems that brings by trying to superimpose a trial framework over what is essentially a parliamentary committee. And I think that that has contributed to the difficult situation we find ourselves in now in terms of process and determining a way forward. But what I do really want to raise at this point is that we have to move timeously. We are constitutionally, you know, required to act timeously, to do our jobs properly. And we can't allow this process to unduly delay us going forward. We have deadlines. We really do need to meet them. We've seen state capture in this country and the effect that it has had on essentially delaying all kinds of issues, and we really can't afford to have committee capture in the same way. So this committee has to bear in mind that we are in the driving seat. We are in control of the process. We need to determine the process going forward, but then we need to move forward without allowing a complete chill to settle over these proceedings, because the last thing we want is this committee to just sit endlessly and never be able to reach a conclusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Van Minen. And now recognize Honorable Nkosi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to make a disclaimer, Chair. I'm joining another meeting, so I'm going to make my contributions in a hurried way. Firstly, Chair, I think The application for refusal is a very serious application that is brought by the PP team. My point of clarity to the legal team is, have they considered what a reasonable time is in terms of the rule setting up this committee? And in that regard, have they considered that this process didn't start the day we met here for the first time? It started the day a motion was made, withdrawn, and then made, and a panel was constituted up to a point of appointment of this committee. That's the first point. The second issue I want to ask from them is whether in advising or in considering everything themselves or from any outsider, will they add to a request for clarity the contributory factors from the PP team in terms of what I consider as delaying tactics and fishing for different forums at different times? In other words, if I were I use a chess analogy, one foot in the gutter, one foot in the urban area or in the suburb. So the public protector, in my view, is participating in this process fully aware that she has to account and take responsibility for her actions, but she's always eyeing the exit door on the side to look for a forum where she may impugn the process of this committee. So is the legal team considering that? Thirdly, in relation to all the points raised, for your recusal and for the recusal of Honorable Mailen, I would like the team to indicate from the observations of the record whether indeed there was biasness on your side and on the side of members, and procedurally, whether all the decisions that you made were made in observation of these directives, and if there were objections, why those objections were not raised at the point those decisions were made. And lastly, Chair, I think speaking for myself is that I bring a very independent mind to the process and would not be influenced by any other person. And I think quite largely, when I make my contribution, I do not do so on the basis of a cross-examination by anybody. I do so because I study the documents that are before us. And I, in all fairness, ask questions on the basis of what is disposed in affidavits. So if you impugn biasness on my side, you'll have it very difficult, because I can prove to you that my questions are based on the affidavits that are made, and only minimally so on the results of cross-examination. I agree that you must preside on this process, including on whether you should recuse yourself or not, including Honorable Mailen. And therefore, would tend to agree with the legal advisors that perhaps we should, in deliberation, when on all, everything related there, to seek an opinion that should inform us, but will not take decisions on ourselves. And Chair, that any procedural unfairness in the conduct of the proceedings, in my view, should be raised when such happens. And anyway, lastly, the PP would have access to the courts in any way the decision is taken for a review. Thank you, Chairperson. May I leave the meeting? Sorry.
Thank you, Honorable Ngosi, Honorable Nola.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair,
I think this is the meeting that is was set for us to determine whether the application for recusal meets the threshold or not. I don't understand when we want to refer this meeting to somewhere else when we are supposed to determine this thing as in now. The second thing, Chair, is that unfortunately I disagree with Honorable Lotrich and Honorable Olomisa that we must not go, let us not go to the merits of the content of the application. The application we're dealing with at this committee, and unfortunately, I'm going to go exactly to the contents of the application. The first thing, Chair, I wish to raise is that I want to move that the application be dismissed for the following reasons. One, I would ask you, Chair, and the committee secretariat to assist us as this committee to retrieve the record of the 13th of September and of the last meeting, the last Tuesday, particularly on the basis that Advocate Mbofu said last Tuesday, he was informed by a family member of Advocate Mkwebane that Advocate Mkwebane is off sick and is being taken to a doctor. And from my recollection, that's not what was submitted on the 13th of September. It's just that it's I'm not quite sure of what exactly was submitted on the 13th, but I think the record will assist this committee. I wanted to request that first, Chair. The second issue there, Chair, that is contained in paragraph 5 of the recusal application, is that the committee did not take time and process the issue of Honorable Mailem that he has got an inherent bias and all those things and a conflict of interest. Chairperson, that paragraph is misleading. It's misleading because it is this committee that even sought a legal advice from Abo Ms. Fatima that was delivered in the committee. The committee deliberated on the advice that was sought from the legal services of Parliament. So we have deliberated on the issue of Honorable Mailem and inherent bias and the conflict of interest as the committee, having been well advised by our legal services. So it's not true, Chair, unfortunately, that we did not deliberate, we did not give due regard to the matter. The second issue, Chair, is that there is a constant mention, Chair, that the public protector is appearing in this committee under protest. And we have noted that since day one. We have never had a problem with that statement. As long as it does not renegate the obligation of the public protector to account before this committee on behalf, actually to account before the parliament. This committee is meant to do that work of the parliament. And we must not be made to feel that we're being done a favor by the public protector to appear before this committee. It's a legal obligation for the public protector to be before this committee. Whatever issues that have made the public protector to be under protest must not make us feel that we're being done a favor. Another issue, Chair, that I wish to raise, which is contained equally in paragraph 22 of the recusal application, is the matter that relates, which I think Advocate Mbofu have been raising it, of the narrow or the broader approach. Whether do we go straight to the motion? Do we broaden the scope of the committee in terms of what the independent panel found out as the prima facie evidence or not the prima facie evidence? My point, Chair, would be the independent panel, the role that it plays is to make recommendations to the assembly. We don't take instructions from the independent panel. Now,
out of the issues that were processed by the independent panel, it is in the role of this committee to process whatever that is deemed fit, that is contained from what the independent panel is actually recommending. Even at the time when it says there is no prima facie evidence that this jacket I'm wearing is green, we can go to the depth of that and see if this matter actually we are in agreement with the independent panel, or as there are some matters within what the independent panel is raising that we wish to explore as the committee. Then we take a decision as the committee in respect of what has been received from the submission of the evidence in the committee. Chair, there is another issue of summoning the president, which constantly comes in the committee as well, which the committee set a particular day to process and agreed that the relevance of the matter of the appearance of the president into the committee does not meet the threshold that we are looking for as the committee. And if I'm not mistaken, the committee actually agreed unanimously. The matter that was at the center of discussion was the issue of the suspension of the public protector. I don't recall, Chair, maybe the committee will remind me, us getting into a robust discussion over scathing remarks that were made by the president in respect of the BOSASA, CR17 and all those things. The central discussion